tip toward the outlaw cave. The wind was picking up a little, and it felt like a front was moving in, but nothing that would change the weather much other than to raise or lower the temperature some 20 degrees. I could see the vague glimmer from Vic's phone, and figured she must have already started back, having found nothing in that direction. I took another breath and stretched, immediately regretting it, then bowed down to try to make the stabbing pain go away. I placed a hand out on a boulder and found the rhythm of my breathing. Slowly standing, I turned and looked up the slope and could have sworn I saw something move just as Dog barked. Starting after him, I slipped in the scree but found a clearer pathway that led off to the left and steadily rose up to the cave. I could see a bit of light as if from a dying campfire flickering off the cave's rocky mouth above a few bushes that I didn't remember which blocked the opening. Funny how things changed in a half century. I reached a hand up, grabbed the nearest bush, and pulled myself the rest of the way, taking handfuls as I went like a longshoreman pulling a ship to the wharf. Standing at the opening, I could see the dog was sniffing around someone lying on a sleeping bag on the other side of the dying campfire. Huffing my breath in and out, I caught up with myself, took a few steps in and glanced to the right, seeing a pack, another rod, and some supplies stashed against the wall. It was Abe in the sleeping bag, and I was about to step around the small fire and stoop to him when I heard something in the back of the cave just as Dog growled and bristled. I couldn't see anything even with the flashlight. Liam? Nothing. Dog barked. I had the sense that someone or something was there watching me. I rested my hand on my Colt just in case. Liam! Remember me? I'm the sheriff who came and visited you and your grandfather a couple of days ago at his ranch. Nothing. Don't worry about Dog. He's friendly. Nothing. Liam, my deputy Sancho gave you a badge. A deputy is a star that makes noise. Nothing. I'd just about given up when I heard the siren. Dog barked again, but then wagged and moved forward. I smiled. That's it, Liam. That's the toy. Remember me? I'm here to help you and your granddad. There was some movement in the back of the cave, and the young boy stepped out from the shadows. He blew the whistle again and, without another word, walked toward me and Dog, who gave him a broad lick in the face. Liam sat at Abe's feet on the other side of the fire, petted Dog, and, breaking green twigs, fed them into the tiny blaze. I angled to the side. You need drier wood. He raised his face to me, shiny with tears in the flickering light. I nodded. Don't worry, I'll get some. Glancing at Abe, I lowered my voice. Is your grandfather asleep? I waited a moment. Liam? He shook his head, swiping at the tears, and hugged Dog. Chapter 11. His pulse was very faint and his skin was frigid, but the tough old buzzard was still alive, if barely. I turned and looked at the boy as he stood against the rock wall, one palm pressed flat against the stone, his arm around Dog. I decided to lie. He's going to be okay. Dog barked again, and a light shone in on us from the mouth of the cave. You find Batman and Robin? Over here. Vic crossed toward us and, with a glance at the boy, knelt down. Hi! He nodded, but still said nothing. Vic felt Abe's pulse and then pried one of his eyelids back before turning to look at me, her own eyes widening before turning to Liam. Honey, what happened to your grandfather? The boy just stood there. Did he fall in the water? He nodded. She leaned forward and, after placing an ear against the old man's chest, glanced back at me, lowering her voice to a whisper. Severe hypothermia with dysrhythmia. I sighed. Yep. We've got to get him out of here. Running the topography through my head, I couldn't think of a single spot where we could possibly land a medevac helicopter. She interrupted my train of thought. We're going to need help. I can carry him out. Are you nuts? There's no way. You take Liam and get back up to the rim. Drive to where you can get a signal and get Double Tough and Scott out here. Evie got Casper to send a helicopter and landed at the pullout topside with full setup. Her laugh was a bitter bark.
And what? You just waltz out of here with him on your back? In your condition?
My condition is fine. I'll start out with him, and then when you get in touch, you can send those guys down to get him. It's not like I'll get very far. She barely whispered,
and two dead guys are better than one? Why not wait?
You felt his skin and listened to his heart. He must have a core body temperature of about 75. I lowered my own voice even more.
The farther I get him, the better shot he has at surviving.
I gestured toward Liam. Now get him out of here. The faster we move, the better.
We can't risk moving him. He's an eyelash from being dead.
Leaning into her, I gave out with the old ER saying, they're not dead until they're warm and dead. She glanced down at Abe, reached out and placed her fingertips at his throat before looking back at me.
I'll go, but only if you promise to just stay here with him, and no carrying him out there in the dark up a cliff.
I nodded.
Walt!
Go. She shook her head and then turned to look at the boy.
Hey, Liam, you want to take a walk with me?
He didn't move.
I've got candy in the truck. And we can go for a ride and drive real fast and blow the siren and flip on the lights. Want to do that?
He still didn't move.
Gotta be better than sitting around watching your grandfather take a nap, huh?
This time he nodded. She stood and went to him and reached down to take his hand. His dog followed after them.
We need to get going. What do you say?
I watched as she led him to the opening and looked back at me, gesturing as if to a dog.
Stay.
Dog sat. Take him with you.
No. I think if you're going to need any backup, he's it.
Dog looked at me, and we listened as the two of them made their way down the scrabble field into the boulders, Vic talking to Liam the whole way. Pushing on my side, I couldn't feel any pain and figured I had a fighting chance of getting the old man out of there. It wasn't like I had to make it to the top. I just needed to get him as far as I could, or possibly more out into the open where they might be able to lower a gurney. Looking down at him, I shook my head. Old man, what were you thinking? Listening to Vic's voice as it grew fainter down the canyon, I assessed my situation. I figured the smart thing was to do as she'd said and just stay put. Then I heard the little voice that had gotten me in trouble my entire life, telling me that my side wasn't hurting that bad, that Aberane wasn't that heavy, that the climb out wasn't that steep, that I didn't really need the flashlight. I told the little voice to shut up. It didn't. I lumbered to a standing position, stamped up the dying fire, and thought how lucky I was that Abe was a small man. Taking a deep breath and blowing it out through my lips, I peeled the sleeping bag back and carefully lifted him up against my chest until I could get an arm under his shoulder. Then I crouched down and held the one arm as I lifted him from the ground with dog watching me. You know, if you were just a little bigger, I'd have you do this. Taking another deep breath, I shrugged him up a little higher and then stood there, testing the weight. He was heavier than I thought, but nothing like other men I'd carried, and the conditions were better. I figured I'd make it. I took the first step, slid on some rocks, and just stood there for a moment, attempting to not second-guess the decision. So, Aberane, how about you tell me the story of your life, and just skip the part up until a few hours ago? I could see through the trees that the sky was still clear and that a sliver of moon had sliced through, giving out with a little more illumination. Thank heaven for small favors. Dog swept past and took point as I slowly began the descent to the stream below with the unconscious man draped over my shoulder in a fireman's carry. Having dropped about 30 pounds during my recent adventures in Mexico, I was lighter on my feet, but my energy hadn't fully returned, probably because I hadn't had either the inclination or time for any form of exercise or rehabilitation. Still, what mass I'd lost certainly made it easier on my joints, and I had to admit that I really didn't feel so bad and was almost enjoying stretching the dormant muscles. It was about then that the stitch in my side spoke up. Pausing for a second, I took another deep breath and looked ahead to Dog, who was watching me from the next switchback. I'm okay, honest. He waited there until I started off toward him again. There was still a dull ache from my side, but it didn't feel like somebody was poking me with an ice pick, so I allowed my mind to wander back to Henry's potential fishing trip to Alaska. Maybe it wasn't such a bad idea after all. Maybe A vacation was just what I needed to jolt me from my malaise. Then I remembered the more pressing issue involving a high school basketball player and remembered that I hadn't been back to Henry about that. I followed the white on Dog's tail like it was a flag. Don't get too far ahead of me now. I hadn't been to Alaska since the early 70s, and that had been on the very north slope where I provided security for an oversized oil rig. I drank too much then, and a bear had tried to eat both Henry and me. I wondered if girls' high school basketball was really safer. Stumbling over a brick-sized rock, I caught myself and stood there for a few seconds to get my bearings. We'd made it down from the embankment leading to the cave, and the stream was to my left. The ground was flatter down here, but there was less light, so I just wanted to allow my eyes to adjust. I could pull my maglite from my belt, but then I wouldn't have a hand free to catch us if we fell. Taking another step, I tripped over another rock, so I pulled out the heavy-duty flashlight and clicked it on, realizing I was now losing any hopes of night vision, not that it was doing any good anyway. Dog was up the trail getting another drink of water before turning and looking at me again. "I'm coming." Assured, he turned and started up the path with me following a little slower this time. I took a few more steps when I noticed the dog was simply standing in the trail, looking up the long ascent to the pullout. It was strange how he stood without moving, and I figured there had to be something or somebody there, probably more mule deer. The last thing I needed was to be out here in the dark, carrying a man and wandering around looking for a lost dog. "Hey, don't even think about it." In another second, he was gone. "Dog!" Barking his way up the trail, I listened as the noise echoed off the rock canyon. "Dog!" He was making good time up the switchbacks, and all I could do was sigh. Maybe he'd heard Vic or Double Tough or the highway patrol pull up at the top and had gone off to meet them. Either way, I needed to get going and shrugged Abe farther up onto my shoulders. Stepping off again, I made good time, and as near as I could tell, it was just about another quarter of a mile to the top. I'd caught my breath and had reached the last scramble before making it topside, when the stitch in my side came back with a vengeance. I'm not sure what was going on in there, but it was like something had blown apart and my tires were trying to run flat. Swallowing, I lowered my head and trudged on, bending my back a little in an attempt to relieve the pain. I dropped the flashlight near the trailhead and watched as it bounced off the rocks and whistled into the darkness with a clattering finality. I averaged at least one of the things per year. I took the last few steps into the clearing at roadside, and there was Dog sitting beside the International Travel Hall, wagging his tail and looking up at the same wolf I'd seen on the mountain, who now sat on the roof of the vehicle centered in the luggage rack. "What the hell?" The wolf turned to regard me, but made no other movement. At second look, I could make out a little more detail and could see he was indeed darker than the other specimens I'd encountered, but with the gray around his muzzle more evident. Whether it was in comparison with the beast known as Dog or just being closer, I could see he was even larger than I had thought. I figured he must have gotten Dog's attention and then realized what he was dealing with and decided that vertical was the better part of valor. But climbing on top of a vehicle? That couldn't be normal behavior for any wolf. "Howdy." He didn't move, and neither did I. "Dog." He turned his head to look at me, but he didn't make any move to abandon his post, either. Patting my leg, I called out, "Dog!" Reluctantly, he rose and sidled in my direction. Mostly because I couldn't hold the weight much longer, I carefully knelt down and pulled Abe from my shoulder, laying him on the ground. I was relieved he was still breathing, but he showed no sign of consciousness. Glancing up, I could see that 777M was still sitting there, watching the three of us. Slipping off my jacket, I placed it over Abe in an attempt to make him as comfortable as possible. Having done the best I could, I sat beside the old man and studied the wolf, which studied me in return. "I tell you, Larry, you are one strange animal." The ears perked a bit, but that was all. "There's going to be a bunch more like me here in a short time, and maybe even a helicopter, so maybe you want to get out of here while the getting is good." He continued to study me, apparently unconcerned. "Look, I'm not giving you Abe. First off, he's not dead, and second, you need to get out of the habit of snacking on people. It's bad enough that you ate a sheep, if it was you that did it." His luminescent eyes never left me. What do you want?
He glanced up the road toward Powder Junction. Are they coming? Dog barked and started to move back toward the vehicle. Come here, you. He turned to look at me, longing to ignore my command, but then paced over and sat where he'd been. Stay. The wolf rose up on all fours and even deigned to stretch, but continued keeping his attention toward the road, where I could now see flickers of headlights and hear the angry howl of a siren. Forcing myself to stand, I reached out and grabbed Dog's collar, holding him fast as my truck's emergency and off-road lights became visible, along with a few other vehicles just behind. They were closing fast, and I could hear the distant but steady thumping of my least favorite form of transportation coming from the south. When my eyes were turned at the top of the International, in that instant, he was gone. Glancing around, I felt like I was looking for an apparition I'd summoned up. Walking forward, I continued to hold on to Dog. I peered into the bushes around us and up and down the road, but it was as if he'd never been there. Dog lurched, and I lost my grip on him as he darted around the travel hall and back to me. Dropping his nose to the ground, he circled the vehicle again, swinging his great bucket head side to side in an attempt to pick up the scent. With another stab of pain, I felt a little woozy, so I placed a hand on the International. You can't track him? He sniffed the ground a few more times and then raised his head and whined, perhaps for the first time in his life. It's okay. Honest. I petted his broad head and glanced up the road at the approaching lights, lots of them, and started laughing. I laughed so hard, I threw my head back, and the next thing I knew I was lying on the ground, looking at the left front tire of the travelall. Dog was barking and sniffing at my head as I lay there, having difficulty breathing. Dust clouds were broiling up everywhere, and I felt completely disoriented, so much so that I reached out and clung to the tire in hopes that I wouldn't blow away into the canyon. The engine of the helicopter and the sirens from the vehicles were deafening, but I could hear voices and called out even though I was pretty sure no one could hear me. I felt something blow against my jacket sleeve and released the tire long enough to grab a hold of whatever it was. The noise and wind had died down a bit, so I risked opening one eye. The dirt was still swirling, but I held the paper close and chuckled into the darkness as I read the blue and white card in my hand. Cash prizes, Mallow Cup play money, 5 points. Motherfucker! Nice to see you, too. I raised a hand but found an IV there and so let my hand drop back under the small, tidy bed. She started to speak again, but I interrupted. No, wait. I have to say this. Putting on my best, most confused and melodramatic voice, I spoke with a dreamy quality. Where am I? Motherfucker! I turned and looked at her, running her hand through the raven hair. You're at the ass-kicking world finals, and you're first in line. Abe? Alive, but still unconscious, in a drip sedation coma in an attempt to stabilize his body temperature. He's in the ICU of Wyoming Medical Center in Casper, because it was their helicopter. She glared at me. And you are in Durant Memorial because I wanted to stab you with a pencil the whole drive back. I feel a little sore, now that you mention it. Motherfucker! I glanced around the room, noting with relief that she was the only one there. Where's the doc?
He's not talking to you, and he says he's never taken care of you again.
Uh-oh.
He's pissed, Walt, just like the rest of us.
She leaned back in the chair and shook her head at me like a hanging judge.
Stupid.
I know.
Rookie stupid.
Yep.
Arrogant stupid.
Yep.
Just plain stupid.
I nodded silently.
Motherfucker.
Okay, all right. I get it.
You had an abscess. A dangerous one that set up a wall that wouldn't let the antibiotics get to the infection, and it finally burst.
I felt around on my side and immediately found the source of discomfort. That's what was hurting? She threw her hands in the air.
Who knew it was hurting at all, you asshole?
This has pretty much shot you to the top of the office pool, huh? With hands on hips, she bent from the waist, really rearing back with this one.
Motherfucker! So is this a result of the stab wound in Mexico?
Maybe.
Or possibly some new and cataclysmically stupid shit you may have done since then. She started to turn away, but then whipped back.
What if you had died, lying out there somewhere with Apesicle on top of you?
Sighing, I self-consciously looked around for my hat. It usually made things better. I knew we had to get him out of the cave, and also knew it was going to take a long time hiking down there with a gurney and then hauling him back out. I figured by that time he really would be dead. So once again, two bodies would be better than one? I didn't know I had a problem.
You've been in pain for weeks. Most people take that as a sign that something's wrong, you idiot.
They'll have to fix it.
They already have, you moron. Half of it, at least.
Is it a nice scar? I peeked down the neck of my gown, attempting to see the repaired area, but it was heavily bandaged. Is everybody as angry at me as you?
Angrier. But I'm the one who gives a shit about you enough to sit in here for hours to see if you'd wake up.
It's obvious to everyone that you don't care whether you live or die, so why should they? Is Liam all right?
Yes.
Dog?
Yes, except for Abe, maybe. Everybody's all right except for you.
How long have I been out?
She went over to the window. All night, and most of the morning.
Any sign of Donnie Lott?
No.
I saw Larry. Annoyed, she turned back to me.
Who?
The Wolf. 7:77 a.m. Larry.
Get the fuck out of here.
He was sitting on top of Aberani's International when I got to the rim.
You imagined it.
Dog saw him, too.
Get the fuck out of here.
Honest. She reached into the breast pocket of her duty jacket and pulled out the Malakoff play money card, holding it out to me from the foot of the bed.
And that explains this?
There was a knock at the door, and Henry Stanningbear appeared, his dark hair hanging down at the sides of his face. I brought you a Whitman sampler, but the head nurse took it. Very thoughtful. Vic interrupted.
This is no ordinary wolf.
No, I don't think most eat marrow cups. Interesting. The bear entered the rest of the way, reached over and took the card from Vic before slumping down into the guest chair. I nodded at him. Long night? For the owner of the Red Pony Barn Grill, it is always a long night. Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown. I glanced at Vic. You know Sancho quoted Shakespeare to me last night?
Taking your job a little seriously, isn't he?
Henry looked up. Am I missing something? Sasa Vittoria has been approached by some citizens to stand for sheriff. Really? Vic folded her arms.
Motherfuckers!
The bear examined the card. Unlike the other one, this one appears to be relatively worn. His eyes came up to mine. Where did you find it? It found me as I was hugging the tire of Aberani Echeparri's International, trying to keep from blowing into the canyon. And by the way, the wolf was there, too. The same wolf? Yep. On top of Echeparri's car. Vic leaned her thighs against the foot of my hospital bed as Henry handed the card back to her. Strange behavior for a wolf, if you ask me. Henry suppressed a smile. The more I hear of this wolf, the more I believe that he may be extraordinary. She tossed the card under the bed. You mean other than him popping up all over the Bighorn Mountains? That is not particularly notable, in that wolves are known to travel 100 miles a day or more. He's not a ghost, Henry. Dog saw him. He perked up at the information. How did Dog react? I thought about it. Strange. He acted strange. He took off after him while we were on the trail, and when I got to the top, he was sitting there looking at the wolf as it sat on the car. On the car? Right up on the top between the luggage rails. Dog was not barking? Not much, no. Then he knew this wolf. If it was a wolf. Well, the wolf didn't seem too concerned about us. It just sat there until Vic and the troops arrived. Then what happened? He disappeared. How do you mean? I looked away for an instant. When I looked back, he was gone. Shaking my head, I added, also,
Dog tracked around the truck twice and never picked up his scent.
Nothing. Nothing.
Now, he's no bloodhound, and it's possible that he was more worried about me. The Cheyenne Nation reached down and picked up the cart again.
Is there a child endangered in this case?
He stood and walked toward the window, but I was sure he wasn't seeing the landscaped scenery there.
Virgil White Buffalo seems to appear when there are ramifications for children. And didn't Libby Troon mention something along those lines?
She did.
I'm not saying the wolf is Virgil, but it is possible that this wolf is a totem or messenger animal being used as a mediator between the spiritual forces and temporal beings here in the physical world.
Well, I don't think we have anything covering that in the Absaroka County Sheriff's Handbook.
What I am saying is that he may be here to help.
Vic laughed. He wasn't much help to Miguel Hernandez.
He is still a wolf.
I sighed. The better part of a week on this case, and I don't think we're any closer to finding out who killed Hernandez or even if he was murdered. Vic came around, sat on the bed and reached through the blanket to pull the toe she sometimes used as target practice.
Maybe Larry tied the mule back up.
I sighed, feeling the only thing I always felt when I was in a hospital, the need to get out. There's still something odd going on in the Echeparri family, and if we can find out what that is, then maybe we can get some traction. I glanced around the room. Now, the important question. Where's my hat?
No. The important question is...
The bear looked between the two of us.
Who, pray tell, is Larry? How come there's nobody at the office?
If by nobody you mean Ruby, it's Saturday night.
Oh.
I sat at the top of the stairs as Henry followed in with the pizza, trying to pretend it was my idea.